I'm speaking today with Chris Feldman, who was one of the attorneys that, successfully sued Tom DeLay's Texans for a Republican majority PAC after the 2002 elections. Chris, tell me a little bit about that lawsuit, which led to a judgment against the Texans for a Republican majority PAC. How did that come about?
That suit started back in 2003 when several candidates sued the treasurer for TrimPAC, Bill Severa, for the illegal use of corporate money in the 2002 election. It was discovered through certain IRS filings that TrimPAC had a corporate slush fund in which corporate money was being used for political purposes, and that's something that the election code expressly prohibits. And in the course of doing that lawsuit, we had put together the money laundering effort by the DeLay machine, i.e. TrimPAC, and the $190,000 that was transferred up to the Republican National Committee and then transferred back down to seven different candidates. And those candidates were all Republicans, obviously, and they ran against some of the plaintiffs in that lawsuit.
And that evidence that you discovered, including, you know, the bit about the $190,000 that went to the national PAC and that then came back, that actually led to the ultimate criminal investigation against DeLay and his associates, John Coleandro, Jim Ellis, and Warren Robald, and to the indictments that Ronnie Earle secured against them and also against the Texas Association of Business, correct?
Didn't hurt, and it certainly did lay out a fact pattern. What happened in the back rooms of the grand jury, though, no one knows exactly, but we did secure a ruling in the TrimPAC case that supported the eventual indictments, which came down approximately 5, 6, 7 months after the trial. In the course of the trial, what I was able to prove was that in October of 2002, the RNC cut, the Republican National Committee cut 7 checks in sequential order. In other words, it was check number 1, check number 2, check number 3 on the same day, and sent those checks on the same day down to 7 different candidates, and each candidate reported receiving those checks on October 4th. And then working back from that, we were able to show that 2 weeks prior to that, TrimPAC had sent exactly $190,000 up to the RNC. And then the email trail indicated in that case that somehow when TrimPAC had initially sent the $190,000 up to the RNC, the money had gotten stuck in the bureaucracy up there, and some pressure was needed to get the money out of the RNC and back down to the candidates, and perhaps they were debating over the exchange rate in terms of, well, hard money for soft money or corporate money for non-corporate money. And somehow or another, Jim Ellis, Tom DeLay, and John Coleandro all teamed up and got that money out of there in one form or another. We're not exactly sure, but it all came back down on the same day. And when the RNC representative at trial was asked about this whole thing by myself under cross-examination, he was posed with the question, is it your testimony? And I quote, is it your testimony that this whole thing was a coincidence? And he says, well, I wouldn't call it a coincidence. And that was the RNC representative at the trial who was testifying on this very issue.
Now, what it was that made this illegal was partly was the fact, A, that $190,000 had come from corporate donations, and B, that money was then spent on something other than what's called administrative functions. Basically, it was spent on, well, polling and other political activities. The argument that was ultimately made, that has been made in trying to get the indictments dismissed, was that those counted as administrative functions, but the court hasn't bought it, but that was the crux of the illegality, correct?
That's correct. The crux of the issue, as you put it, is that when TrimPAC sent the money up to the RNC, it was corporate money raised by TrimPAC, in certain instances raised by Tom DeLay, maybe directly, or people at his direction. from large corporations doing business in Washington, that corporate money, which is prohibited under Texas law, that corporate money then went up to the RNC to be used in a quote-unquote legal way in other states, allegedly. But then the money was actually sent back down to Texas through this, an RNC basically served as a straw man or a laundering facility, sent it back down to seven candidates as non-corporate money. It was just a swap. It was just a big shell game to make it look like the corporate money was really non-corporate money, and Texas law expressly prohibits the use of corporate money in political races. And what we were able to show is that by using the RNC as a straw man or a laundering mechanism, they were able to infiltrate the 2002 elections with corporate funds that just came in and went through a bank account at the RNC.
Okay. So all that happened a long time ago, and a lot of this is still working its way through the appeals courts. And just recently, last week, Third Court of Appeals in Travis County handed down a ruling based on an appeal made by Jim Ellis and John Colleandro, who had argued that the Texas statute that was in place at the time essentially did not define a check as being a possible means of funding this kind of money laundering. And while the court refused to throw out the indictments, it basically said it wasn't that, because it was ruling on the constitutionality of the law. It essentially agreed with them that checks aren't cash, and that has since been touted by Tom DeLay's defense attorney, Dick DeGaren, as a reason why ultimately the case will be dismissed or his clients will be found not guilty. What can you say about that?
Well, the reasoning by the Third Court of Appeals as to checks not being a form of currency constituting or falling under the money laundering statute is the largest stretch I've ever read in a judicial opinion, and is ironically judicial activism at its best when you consider who actually wrote the opinion. It's outrageous. Basically, the Third Court of Appeals held you can't launder money through use of a check. That's the decision. And they went out of their way to issue that decision when it really didn't matter in the context of the Colleandro and Ellis appeal, and it ultimately will be used in the DeLay appeal of the indictment. And it was, that was the court going out on a limb trying to find a way to get rid of this indictment against DeLay. And it's just disheartening and flat out a disappointment in the judicial system that kind of reaching would take place, especially in a case with such important implications regarding the integrity of the political system and the electoral process in Texas. And in terms of DeGaren's position saying that DeLay didn't launder money, I don't think Dick DeGaren knows the facts of his own case. We proved that there was money laundering. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. If there's some fancy argument that cash or currency doesn't equal a check, then Dick DeGaren's reading out of a dictionary I've never seen before.
I think one of the reasons why the court made that argument, and it noted it in its ruling, was that the 2005 legislature, obviously after the fact, passed a bill that clarified this statute to include checks in its definition of funds. The court's reasoning, I guess, was that that meant that wasn't part of the law before. Ronnie Earle's position is that this was just a clarification. Can you comment on that?
Of course. Let's not forget that one of the principals involved with TrimPAC was Tom Craddock. Craddock is who got that bill through the Texas legislature. And it was Craddock that was interacting with Ellis and Colleandro back in the 2002 elections. And it was Craddock that ultimately benefited by becoming Speaker of the House following the 2002 elections. And it was Craddock who used TrimPAC as a vehicle to get elected Speaker of the House. He had a direct interest in exonerating TrimPAC and or its affiliates or principals, meaning Poliandro, Ellis, DeLay, whomever else, from wrongdoing. That was the legislature sticking its nose in a judicial process, and merely teeing up an argument for the lawyers involved in the appeal of the money laundering indictments involving DeLay, Poliandro, and Ellis. So they gave the court, in essence, Craddock gave the court something to hang their hat on. But when you look at the statute as it existed prior to 2005, to say that checks aren't included in that because checks aren't currency, again, is about as legitimate as DeLay saying that he's an ethical guy.
Interestingly, around the same time, in a completely unrelated matter, a different lawsuit brought by a coalition of groups, including the ACLU and the Texas, what is it, the Freedom Foundation, I forget who it is, Kelly Shackelford's group, right. They brought forth a lawsuit that invalidated the so-called Speaker's Statute in Texas, what was passed in 1973, that prohibited political contributions that were intended to affect the outcome of the Speaker's race. Didn't really have anything to do with your case, but I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes, I do. That decision by Judge Sparks, while being a reasoned opinion, misplaced from this perspective that the state, which argued on behalf of the statute, argued to uphold the statute, meaning the lawyers at the Attorney General's office, completely missed the fact that the Speaker statute is a statute in place to regulate the internal functions of the Texas House. The Texas House could regulate itself. Election of the Speaker is an official act of the Texas legislature. And that's all it was. It is not a campaign finance statute. It is a statute in place to regulate the influencing of the legislature, just as we have lobby statutes in place to regulate lobbyists trying to influence the legislature. However, the state, probably not wanting to uphold the statute, did a poor job of arguing to protect it, and an odd coalition came together to challenge it. But it, you know, it's one of those cases where the ACLU uses a lack of judgment and decides to spend time, money, and resources to support those with real power, meaning large corporate interests that were ultimately behind the effort to knock out the Speaker statute. The loss of the Speaker statute is very dangerous to the Texas political system, because now you have an even larger hole to use hidden corporate cash in Texas elections. Ultimately, we are heading more and more towards a state ruled by boardrooms and not family living rooms.
Well, what do you see that can be done about that?
The first thing that can be done about that is electing state representatives that believe in honesty and integrity in government, and government by the people and for the people, not by S-corps or, you know, various large corporate entities. So I think the 2008 elections are very important, and they're setting the stage for the 2010 elections, which are very important as to redistricting. But what we need are true reformers in the Texas House, much like those that passed many laws in the early to mid-70s that attempted to address the Sharpstown scandal. What's happened in the past 35 years since the Sharpstown scandal is a slow rolling back, and now an accelerated rolling back, of basic and public integrity provisions that were passed in an attempt to protect the public from corrosive influence of big money at the Texas Capitol. And, you know, we've just got to start asking ourselves whether or not we want to go back to pre-Sharpstown days, and that's certainly a direction we seem to be going right now.
And towards the end of electing more reform-minded legislatures, you're part of a new PAC effort in Houston called HPAC. Tell me a little about that.
Sure. HPAC is a associate, or a PAC, political action committee of emerging professionals and community activists and leaders, etc. Emerging leaders, I should say, that are just getting to the point where they can participate in the political process, not only from the perspective of volunteering and giving their time, but also of contributing a little bit. And amongst this group of people, everybody has chipped in the form of a PAC, as stated, and all this money is being used for get out the vote efforts in the 2008 elections. And it's an attempt to build something long-term that looks at building get out the vote efforts and identifying Democratic voters in Harris County that will benefit all candidates and all efforts to elect a fair, decent, and candidates with integrity, as opposed to, you know, just raising money and giving it to a candidate's campaign, which, while that is very important, it's a structure that exists outside of candidate campaigns, and it's in place to just help always get people out to the polls, regardless of who's running as a Democrat. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but it's steeped in the philosophy we've got to get out the vote to benefit progressive ideals in Harris County.
What has HPAC done so far?
HPAC has raised a fair amount of money, at least for a crowd like this, and has identified potential organizations to donate it to for get out the vote purposes in the 2008 election. We had, just for example, a fundraiser a couple weeks ago where Mayor Bill White appeared, and over 60 people attended.
Okay. And when you say you envision it as a long-term thing, you know, what, you know, where do you hope to go with it?
Well, those of us that started APAC, and there are numerous different people, hope to see it as a lasting institution that will serve as a networking mechanism for emerging community leaders to meet each other and exchange notes and help each other in various political efforts, but also be a lasting institution in terms of a mechanism for people, emerging leaders and activists, to come together and put money into a single pot for purposes of getting out the vote to benefit all Democratic candidates in Harris County.
All right. Chris Feldman, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks.